This tape was recorded on October 20th, 1992, at the home of Bertha Face at 1324 Lake Avenue, which puts it way out past the cemetery, out near the Cardoma Lodge, and it's out in that area where the Face family, or I should say the Bossacker family, had some property. And as you will hear in the interview, much of the family still lives out there. Bertha's brother and sister both live across the street. And, of course, she still lives there. And then there is a cousin, and that would be Mary Gardner, who lives just up the street from them. So it's quite a conclave of Bossackers. But they certainly do have a long line of history that goes with the family, and it's very interesting to listen to Bertha recite it. Much of what she has to say, of course, has already been recorded on tapes that are presently at the museum, but this perhaps adds another dimension. So let's pick up the interview.
Dr. Elguire's house that my father built.
Oh, yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah.
So I have to take my glass off of you for a while. Otherwise, I won't understand that. I better leave that here in case it drops the brain.
And this is my uncle, Bird, who used to live in this house going after the mail. We had to pick up all our mail on that corner.
Okay. And even though the road made the bend here?
Oh, sure. They had to walk them down the mail. That's as far as they delivered. And in the summer, they delivered it up here.
Up this to Cardoma?
No, a little farther.
Okay. Yeah. And twice a day, I understand.
Twice a day.
They delivered
mail. Twice a day in the summer, but not in the winter.
Now, this is across the street from Gilfrey Sons, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And it still looks...
Of course, now it has that wall up here.
Yes.
With the cement
retained wall. Do you know when it was that he built it?
Well, he died in 1919, so it had to be probably 1917. He built it for Susan Yerkes, you know, who brought him to the
right.
Hall.
Uh-huh.
Susan and... Well, Susan's the one who they had the contract with my dad.
But you were telling me the Yerkes were involved in the Cardoma Lodge, too.
Yes, yeah, we did have that very nice.
Yeah, right. The two sisters.
Yeah, the two sisters. Well, not Cardoma. Cardoma, I think she was there alone. But the two sisters taught at Aiken Hall. Susan Hill and Helen.
But then how did Yerkes get into it?
Well, it was Susan Yerkes.
Oh, I see. Susan Yerkes.
Susan Yerkes and Helen.
Oh, you've got some other pictures here.
Well, this is a picture of my dad's pavilion down at the beach.
Okay.
And here you can see his name was August, and they called it August Pavilion.
Okay.
And there's the name. This is the pavilion.
So it was actually August...
August Bossacker.
Bossacker.
Yes.
Bossacker.
And that's my mother and my aunt and my sister and I.
What is that?
And I have an idea. I don't know, but I have an idea that they are sitting on a pile of lumber for the house that my dad built.
Oh, sure.
Because this looks like the hill.
Absolutely.
You know? And our house was where the Lee Chapel now stands.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right.
But that's all I can... Of course, I don't have anyone to ask, so
just
it looks as if it could be mm-hmm. the lumber for the house that we lived in.
Looking at those skirts, it puts it somewhere before 1917, I would say.
Oh, this would be, I was probably two and Edna.
Oh, that's you?
Yes.
Okay.
And Edna.
So you were two.
And she
now
was
you're
going
to have to reveal your date of birth. You were born when?
In 1905.
1905, so mm-hmm. this would have been 1907, all right. Yeah. Well, we were commenting when your dad may have built that, so if those match up,
that would
put it around
probably
before 1910.
No, I was only 5 years old then. I was in junior high. I don't know if I was in junior high when he built this, but I know that my sister and I were taking piano lessons from Margaret Lewis, mm-hmm. and she and Maud Isherwood lived together. You know, she taught, Maud Isherwood taught in the high school, mm-hmm. and one part of that caught fire one night before we were going to a recital. I do remember that much.
Before it was built?
No, it was in the
built?
Process.
Uh-huh,
it was in
yeah.
the process. Uh-huh. She wasn't living there then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know exactly what you're interested yeah. in. But
oh, no, this is all very interesting. This is it.
Now no, notice the swimsuits.
Let's see now.
Bathing
here
suits.
Here they are.
Bathing suits.
You bet.
You know, because they...
Sure, they did just bathe. Yeah.
Oh, and this is on top of the hill. That's the lookout right there.
Oh, yeah.
It's still there, you know, the lookout. And that's where the steps go down, right?
Okay.
Right here at the point.
Now, then the Highland Park would be on down this way. Yeah,
this way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Sure.
And there was a pathway down to the lakefront that went to the wireless station, and that's what my uncle manned that wireless station, and he sent messages to the boats going to and from Chicago and Milwaukee and all over.
Now, was his name Bossiker also?
Yes, Ferdinand. Uh-huh. Ferdinand Bossiker.
Ferdinand Bossiker.
He received the message when the Titanic went down in 1911, wasn't it?
Yes, 1911, right.
Yeah.
Now, was he in charge of that during the First World War? Would it have been 1917?
He could still have been.
He was the one?
My dad died in 1919, right at the close of the war.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what...
Oh, no, I just thought we'd chat for a while. The interest... How much do you remember about the pavilion down there with your dad?
Well, I said if I didn't have a memory, I wouldn't have remembered anything about it, Dave. But he sold it when Edna and I entered kindergarten. And I remember very vividly being down there, and all of our friends who came down there weekly, or you know, or we came down all the time, and many of the resorters, of course, we knew practically everybody who came to the resort. But my mother and dad and Mrs. Troger, they call it now, or Traeger, who came down there, and I guess she took care of my sister and I while my mother and dad were so busy. But she used to spend a lot of time down there, and I can remember being there, and many of our friends would come and sit on the beach, and my sister and I would crawl out of bed and go and visit them. So I mean, I remember all of that. And
but your home at that time was right over here.
Yes. And the home that I'm living in now has this section of it was part of the bathhouse that my dad took when he sold the place, and he took part of the bathhouse and moved it up on this hill and built this house. And well, I'll show you a picture of the house the way it was in the early 1900s. No paved road, dirt road, and wooden sidewalk. This is this house.
That's
and that was a duplex that my dad built and lived. Mm. That's where this new house is now.
Oh, right next door.
Yeah, and that's, see, there's our house.
Okay.
See, there was a, we had chickens, we had two cows, a horse and chickens. My uncle lived in there, he had chickens.
But this was, let's see, early 1900s. Mm-hmm. This was the only road to the lake.
Only road. Oh, and my dad built a garage, you know, next to a storage garage, where the resorters kept their cars because they could only drive that
far. I remember this.
You remember that?
I sure do. Yeah. And then the gas pumps.
Highland Park Garage, and the gas pump that was there.
Sure.
Yeah,
I remember that. So this is part of the bathhouse.
Yeah. And I don't know, did I ever tell you what they were like? See, there was this great big pavilion that was an ice cream parlor. They didn't, there were no drinks of any kind. Well, probably pop. I don't remember that much, but I know ice cream and candy, because Edna and I used to go to our dad when he went to Muskegon to the candy company to buy the candy for the season,
mm-hmm.
or I mean periodically.
Yeah.
About it. And also connected to this pavilion, the picture that I showed you, was a wooden walk that led to the dance parlor.
Oh yeah.
And there was a big dance hall. That became a, the basement of that became a roller rink afterwards after he sold it. And of course the dance hall then was all open air. People could dance and a lot of people went down just to watch the dancers. And when my dad sold it, then they boarded up the windows and so people couldn't look in, and it took away a lot of the business because they got a lot of business from the people who would go there and watch, you know. And it was just a nice summer thing,
sure,
for people to do.
Sure.
And I guess the dances were every Wednesday and Saturday night. And then I do remember going to movies, too, on Saturday nights once in a while.
There?
Yeah, there.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
We have a movie preceding the dance.
Now, there was a roof over this.
Oh, yes.
But it was wide open.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
The shutters, you know.
I remember that. Right.
Now, that one had a great big porch around it. A great big porch where people could walk.
But that,
the benches, and could sit around there, too.
Your dad owned that, too?
Yes. Uh-huh. And in the summer, band concerts were held there on Sundays. And Sunday afternoon. And people would drive, trolley used to be just loaded with people from town that would come out here on the trolley to listen to the band concerts. So it was really a lively place.
Oh, yeah. Now, your dad owned that from turn of the century until,
I would think that he probably sold it in 1910 when I was about 5 years old. I know he sold it when we entered kindergarten. And after that, he was a contractor and builder, and he started building cottages out here. He did many of the cottages right behind my, on the hill, in Lover's Lane.
Uh-huh.
And then he built cottages until he evidently almost killed himself working. He worked so hard. And then he became sick in 1918, and he died right at the, after the war, in January of 1919. But one of the biggest cottages that my dad and mother owned was Grand Lodge. That was one of the ones on the Parade of Homes that was held this year. And that's been made into a winter home. And he built cottages, the Grand Lodge, Mishmo, and Don't Worry, Blenner Hassett, a whole bunch of them up on the ridge. And I don't know if you ever heard of Norma Shearer, the movie actress.
Of course, yes.
You heard?
Right.
Well, her uncle and aunt were friends of my mother and dad's, and they lived in a cottage on that ridge called Ball Page. And that name was taken from the play that she was in. Mrs. Percival was in Seven Keys to Baldpate. And they named the cottage Baldpate Inn. Well, the one summer, Norma Shearer and her whole family came to visit. And that was when she was a young girl, I would say, in her probably 15, 16.
She was not an actress.
No, yet. No, not then, but after that. I don't know how long after that, but she was a very popular girl, beautiful girl. And
you mean even here she was popular?
Oh, in the resort. Uh-huh. Yeah, she was popular that summer. And but then we kept track of her because I always did, because she came back, she was down to our house with her family, and she had me play one of my pieces that I learned. It was humoresque.
Oh, sure.
So I kept track of Norma and her brother, I think it was Douglas, was her, was with her not in the movies, but he did production manager or something. No. I know he would be
sure
in that line. Let's see what else.
Your dad had it from, say, 1898.
No, my dad and mother were married in 1901.
Okay, so we're just
after that. Yeah, in 1901, after they were married, he and my mother went to Germany on their honeymoon. That was it. He came from Germany when he was 16,
okay,
all by himself. And that was the only time he returned to his homeland, you know, for his wedding trip. He never got back there. Of course, he died in 1919, and this was 1901. But
well, you spoke with an accent then.
A little bit. Uh-huh. Yeah, a little bit.
They say if you move before your teen years, you won't have an accent. If you move after.
There are so many things that I wish I had asked both my mother and dad about their early childhood. I don't know why he happened to come into Grand Haven to settle, you know. And
did the family come, or he came?
Well, he came all by himself.
Wow.
And then he was at 16. Now, you know, the
pretty remarkable
people at 16. Well, we figure that he must have known his trade before he came here, because unless Captain Walker helped him with something. But he lived with Captain Walker, I remember, for a little.
Walker, the Coast Guard?
No, well, I don't know. He lived where my sister's house is now, where that red brick beat, right down here. That was where he lived there for a spell.
If there was a Captain Walker, Bill Walker.
Oh, that's the one.
Is it? Okay.
Yes, that is the one.
You know, Charlie Plowman lives where, right,
right
here.
There. You know, he died this past week.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh. He was, his service was at our church on Friday.
Well, Well, he was a bad
health. Oh, he had heart failure.
And his eyes had failed him.
Very bad.
Yeah. Well, he was in the Coast Guard.
Oh, yes. He was in the station in Grand Haven for 10 years.
Yeah.
And he went all over during the war. He was stationed in many places. Then he served in Manistee for a while. I don't know exactly all the places where he was.
Captain Walker would have been, I think during his time, that would have been the teens, the 20s.
Yeah. Charles was here later. They were married in 28.
Oh, okay. That would have been later.
Yeah.
You're right. Well, so your dad lived with Captain Walker?
For a while, I guess, until they got married. And then the first year, I was born in a house at the foot of 2nd Street. And my sister Edna was born upstairs in the pavilion, because when my dad and mother were first married, they lived upstairs. I don't know how they could stand it during the winter, but I guess the winter Edna was born was a terrible winter. And the doctor walked all the way out there. You know, everybody walked in those days. But,
of course, the trolley was out there at that time. In fact, it just come in 1903 is when it
That went from the corner of Washington and Third, the big church corner,
yes,
to Stickney Ridge. That was the turnaround up by Stickney Ridge.
Oh, of course. Okay, I've got you. Yeah. Went out along the beach.
And the Monroe Station was the stop. Well, right at the foot of the hill, the hill going down to the state park now.
Okay.
It was about where it was. And if we wanted to take it into town, we would walk down there, and we always could listen when it was coming by putting our ears to the poles. But it was, and the Interurban went out there too, you know.
Yes.
Yeah,
right. How many stations were there? I think there were three stations. Of course, the end of the line.
The end of the line.
Where the dance place was.
And the pavilion, we stopped there. The end of the line was just the turnaround.
Okay.
And my dad's, and the Monroe Station, and then into town.
What was the name of your dad's station? Do you remember? Just the
Highland Park. Just Highland Park, the building.
Yeah. Now, what did he do in the wintertime?
Took care of his house and animals.
Uh-huh.
He didn't have that many, but well, and make plans for the next year. People would ask him to build houses, and well, you couldn't do much of that in the wintertime out here. But then he'd take contracts to build them in the spring. That's mostly what he did. Can't remember anything other than keep them being at the house. A lot of family at that time.
Uh-huh.
Family gatherings and so forth.
Highland Park was really booming.
Yeah. Oh, it was really. Today it's nothing like that anymore because that, you know, the of course, the Vilmar. Now it's only a supper club. And there was, today there isn't any activity there for the young people at all. Except the tennis court, I guess.
Yes.
But by the way, Hart Schultz wants to talk to you. He was going to stop in here today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he wants to talk to you about the tennis court because he knows quite a bit about it.
Yes, I know that.
Yeah.
He wanted to know where to get a history of. Oh, God. You have to get that history to him. It's the one written by Highland Park. You probably have seen it. I can't think of the name now.
Helen Bourne?
Yes.
It isn't all accurate.
Is it?
No. That's why Edna and I never bought one. My sister-in-law bought one and we read hers.
Yeah.
But there were so many inaccuracies in that story. She asked me to interview her, and when I said I would, she never came back. So.
Yeah. Sure, because you would remember... Do you remember when the tennis courts? When, of course, you lived right here.
Lived right here.
Which is part of Highland Park, was it not? Yeah. Right.
Oh no, our house wasn't.
Uh-huh.
No, my house here isn't either. It starts right next door, I think.
Uh-huh.
No, not that one. The house beyond this one is the beginning of Highland Park. Of course, Cardona isn't in the park. You know that.
It's just outside.
Yeah, it's on the Grand Haven side.
Yes.
It's not Highland Park proper.
But Hawk's sister, Larry Gardner.
Yeah, they lived. That was my mother and dad's cottage, too.
Was it really?
And it's my mother's name was Henrietta, and they still have that name out in front.
They do. That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful inside. They made a beautiful home out of it.
How are the Schultzes related to the Bossickers? Is there anything?
Well, yes. Mary is my cousin.
Okay.
My mother and Mary's mother were sisters.
Okay.
It happened, Will. You knew Will, too.
Oh, maybe. Sure. Well, they played a lot of tennis up there.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. It was interesting because we used to name people. I don't know who they were, but Hawk could tell you who some of the people were that came to play. And we'd go up there and watch these tournaments in the summertime.
Yes.
Yeah. It was very interesting.
They were, we call it now the National Junior Championships, and I think those were held here.
Yes, I think so too. Oh, I do have to tell you that at the time when the resort was in full swing, people came in June and stayed the whole summer. It was a full season thing, and they'd rent the cottages from the 15th of June to the 15th of September and bring their families here, and then the men would commute to wherever they worked. They would go back and forth either by train or by boat, because the big boats came in here all the time.
Sure.
And that's how we got to know these people so well, because they were almost like part of the family. They come back every season. And all the cottages had names at that time. Now they're numbered.
Mm-hmm.
And you lose track of where the cottages are because they're all numbered. But we knew the names of all the cottages and the people who lived in them,
yeah,
summer after summer. It was very enjoyable. The ridge up here on the north side,
the Edwards side,
was called St. Louis Ridge. Perhaps you've heard of that. And because almost all the people who lived on that ridge were from St. Louis, and they named it St. Louis Ridge. There's the Channon family in the Songbird Cottage from Chicago, a big family. They came year after year, but they became a part of the ridge because they were all close friends.
Now, where the Bilmar is today, is that the approximate or the exact location?
That's about the exact location of where the pavilion was, and where the condos are.
Yes, right.
Was about where the
pavilion,
the dance pavilion.
Okay.
Was.
In addition to that pavilion, there was another pavilion up on the hill in front of the Highland Park Hotel. Was there not, or?
No, I don't.
That looked like an open pavilion, too.
Well, the hotel was really something. Do you remember that at all?
Yes, I sure do. Yes.
But that really was a lovely place, with a great big open porch.
Yeah.
You know, a sort of one. On a small scale, like National Island,
the Grand Hotel. Sure, yeah, would have been. You're right.
But and that changed hands many times during my younger years.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad and mother used to help there too. I mean, when they redecorated the hotel,
mm-hmm,
when they'd go to Chicago to buy new things, and they'd take my mother and dad along to help pick out things. At least when the sweet ones were there, that happened.
Oh, yeah.
I guess Mr. McBride was about the first one I remember. And he lived in Red Haven for a while before he died. Paved roads out this way came quite late. And the reason they decided to pave Lake Avenue was because the Howlett Vault was the first vault in the cemetery, and when the teams of horses brought those great big slabs out from town to put together in the cemetery, it tore up the road so, that they had to pave it. There was no way of transporting anything out this way after the roads were cut out. But then the first road out this way was only wide enough for one car. And if traffic was coming from another way, you'd have to go to the side there and pass.
Yeah.
Well, that was a way part way to Holland too for a while.
Right.
Yes.
So you get one wheel off the road and kind of go slowly.
Oh, yes, there were turnouts, you know, so people but a lot of people were stuck all the time in their cars too because they didn't have the kind of tires that they have today. Then.
Well, are you talking about the main road to Holland or the Lakeshore Road?
The early one. That's the one going out, not the Lakeshore. That's
US 31.
US 31.
Sure.
Would be.
Huh.
Yeah, I remember because it went past my grandmother's house, and my cousins used to come down from Grand Rapids to walk that way. And transportation was poor.
Yeah. Huh. I've never heard that.
One time when I was in college, they came down. They used to come down very often because we lived so close to the beach, and they'd like to come down and go swimming. And on a Sunday, and I was going back to Kalamazoo to school, and my aunt said, well, why don't you ride back to Grand Rapids with us? At that time, I had to take the bus or the train to Kalamazoo. And I said, okay. And before we got to Grand Rapids, we had had four blowouts. Model T Ford, you know. We were going in on four rims. Needless to say, I missed my connections and had to get up early in the morning to catch the train. Many things happened that were...
Now, to get into Grand Rapids, you took, what would have been, 16, mm-hmm. through Coopersville and through Marne.
Yes, and by the time you had that many blowouts...
Oh, yeah.
Didn't have that many spares, you know.
Who ran the place before your dad down here? I'm just trying to think of his name. That was a Walker also.
Well, that Walker.
Yeah. Now, they called him Captain Walker, too, didn't they?
Well, that was the one.
Is it?
Yes.
That's the one that your dad lived with?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, whether he was in the Coast Guard, I...
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Okay. And that's how your dad got the connection with the cars and the Adventure. So when Captain Walker, he's the one that we tell the story how they rented bathing suits.
Oh, my dad did that too when he first had the pavilion. You knew what, I guess, have I ever told you what the bathhouses were like? Like a great big, I can compare it with would be barracks during the war,
uh-huh.
you know, those long buildings.
Sure.
And that's what these bathhouses were like. They were all wooden, of course, and a wood walk going down the center, and then bathhouses, little cubby holes on each side, like a, you know, long stretch.
Yeah.
And then you'd rent your swimsuit and a towel and have to get a lock and key. And you go into these little compartments, whatever they were, mm-hmm. and change your clothes, and then you leave your things right in there and lock it up. And then when you get through, then you turn in your swimsuit, bathing suit,
uh-huh.
and towel. And of course that, well, they kept those washed all the time and ready for the next batch, but they did.
Yeah.
That was a big job. Really, yeah. They worked up very, very hard.
Well, they told how, or I read it, how Captain Walker would rent it by the hour. And 5 cents an hour, 5 cents, whatever the time limit was.
And he'd walk a lot for a nickel at that time.
Yeah, and he'd be out there telling him to come in so he could rent it again.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I wonder if your dad went through that same thing.
That I don't know.
Sure.
So many things I wish I could know. But
what did the trolley cost?
Well, I imagine a nickel. Not any more than a nickel.
No.
You knew what it was. You didn't know what it was like when they got to as they were coming in from the lake to the corner of Washington and Third, they would stop there, and then the seats were movable. I mean, the backs of the benches were movable. Then they'd switch them all over, and then when you go out the lake, you'd be facing the lake. When you come back in, well, that's what they did at Monroe Station. They would reverse all these seats and come so that you would be facing the direction that you were going. That it was fun riding that. Even after we sold the pavilion, you know, that trolley, I don't know when it stopped. Do you know when it stopped running?
27, 28.
Oh, my goodness, I was out of high school and in college for that.
Yeah.
But that was a nice line, I mean, a very popular line.
Now, the dummy line started about 1896 or 7. And that was the line.
That was it.
When the Grand Haven out here. Then when the Interurban came in 1903, they combined the two operations, apparently. But how about you said the Interurban came out here occasionally.
Well, like weekends, uh-huh. You know, people were coming out to the lake. Or even to the resort, I imagine they probably had their luggage, you know, suitcases and stuff on it.
But the dummy line had no...
Oh, no, that had side curtains, uh-huh. Just like the old automobiles. Mm-hmm. Had side curtains on rainy days. They had to enclose it with the side curtains. Uh-huh. It's like my old car when I went to college, too, had side curtains. Each time it rained, you had to get up and put the curtains on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It was a convertible then.
A type of car. It was a uh-huh. Just a they call it a touring car.
Sure.
I got it for nothing, I have to tell you. One family that came to the resort, they had a son who in fact the father had a car agency in St. Louis, and his son brought this Chevrolet up for the summer, and he kept it stored in my mother's garage. By that time my dad wasn't living, but in the yard, not in the garage. But when it came time for him to leave in the fall, his mother said, "John, you're not taking that car back to St. Louis. You can give it to Bertha." He gave it to me. And Charles, my brother-in-law, Charles Palman, did $50 worth of repair work on it, and I drove it all fall back and forth to Kalamazoo.
Oh, you and what kind was it? Model T?
No. Well, I don't know what you call it. It was a Chevrolet. And
it was a Chevrolet.
Right. And then it was all open.
Sure.
And then you put the side curtains on. Uh-huh. And I brought it home at Thanksgiving, and that was the end of it. By that time, there wasn't much left.
I didn't realize Charles Plowman is your brother-in-law.
Yes.
So that's your sister
that
you married.
Yes.
Oh. So they're all right. You're all right here in this
area. My brother lives over here across the street. Oh, that was his daughter that brought the paper over.
Oh, okay.
She brings my mail and paper every day.
Now.
It's very handy to have the relatives so close.
Yeah. Your dad must have owned all this property.
Yes, he owned 5 acres from this lot and all the way. Well, it really went to about the middle of the cemetery driveway, but part of it was taken away by the cemetery until they put a fence up. So now that then when Jake and I got married and we bought this house, my mother gave us a lot and a half, so I have quite a big lot. Goes part way up the hill in the back. And then the rest of it was sold after my mother couldn't do the resort work anymore. I guess when she entered the nursing home, we sold the rest of the property to the city for cemetery purposes. And of course this lot next door, they were never supposed to be using for buildings either, but they did.
Now, the building, or the garage, filling station garage, there was a pump down here.
Yeah, we had a gasoline pump. And sold gasoline to the people who had their cars or anybody who came.
Sure.
Wanted it. But this storage garage held about, I think about 32 or 33 cars. And it used to be Dick Crowe from Grand Rapids ran it for my mother for several seasons and when he was going through high school. And he was a good driver and a good, well, he was sort of a mechanic too. But at nightfall, when the cars had to be put in, he could, let's see, each side of the garage held about 8 or 9 cars, and then they were placed on the floor in rows, and he put them in the order in which the people wanted to take them out the next morning. And I don't believe in all the years he worked for my mother that he ever touched one car. He would pack them in so they were about that much room. He was really tremendous in handling cars. He got so he could almost do it in his sleep. But in all the years that my mother had and dad had the garage, only once a car was stolen. And
I wonder if people would leave their car here after the winter.
Well, no, not during the winter. We left ours.
Yeah.
By that time, we had ours in there, but no, because by then all of the police orders were gone.
But I remember that pump down here. It was an old hand pump.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if you thought it would be fun to resurrect that.
I don't know whether my sister ever gave this Highland Park garage sign to the museum or not. Somebody has it. In the front of the garage.
If you were dismantling things, I'm sure that some of it ended up in the museum.
Yeah, I really don't know.
I'd like to have known what happened to that pump.
That I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe my brother does. I haven't any idea whether he does.
That'd be fun too. We have one down at the museum.
Yeah,
it's a Standard Oil with the crown on top. Mm-hmm. The white crown, gold. I see a white crown, red crown. Yes. You don't remember what yours was here?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
What it was. It was a red.
Red pump.
Red pump.
Uh-huh.
What I do remember is how handy it was to fill up our cars with gas.
Never had to pay.
No, we just filled it up when it was empty. They sold a lot of gasoline.
Yeah, they must have, sure, because it would be so convenient for the people living in Highland Park here. But they parked here and then would walk into their cottages.
Many of them even brought their own ice along from the Grand Rapids. Everything had to be carried. Everything had to be carried.
Something.
Well, you probably know too that Garrett Ekins had that store on Main Street, and
yes.
He would send a man out to take orders around the park in the morning and deliver the orders out to the park in the afternoon. And my mother too, when she wanted anything, she just called. I know his telephone number was 29, and you'd call 29 if you wanted any groceries, and then it would be delivered in the afternoon. It was handy because, of course, I have to tell you too that everything, my mother was an excellent baker and an excellent cook. But because we lived out so far, everything she had was on a big scale. She bought flour by the barrel, sugar by the 100 pounds, and everything like that, you know.
Sure.
Nothing in little quantities because we were not able to run back and forth to stores like people can today.
Yeah.
It made a lot of difference, everything we did. She was a seamstress, she could sew our clothes. And of course, women at that time could. They could do everything domestic that they had to do.
Yeah, they were taught it by their mothers.
Yeah.
I was told that Garrett Ekins had a substation out here.
Yes, and that was right across the street here. Right across from where
Well, just about where the corner of my brother's house is over there. Yeah, he had his grocery store.
And it was...
Then he would have, not everything, you couldn't, but you, if you ran out of bread or milk or things like that, you could pick it up at the grocery store.
How did he have meat? No refrigeration?
No, they didn't have refrigeration.
Yeah, that would be the thing. Yeah. Or dairy products and meats and refrigeration. Well, Gary Mitch Verplank tells how he used to motorize out here.
Oh, yes. And it was fun watching him cut the ice, too, you know. I don't know where they cut it, but I can remember seeing the big blocks being cut in squares, you know. And of course, my mother had there was a substation that Mr. Mitchell at one time delivered ice out here. And there was a substation that was well insulated with, what did they use? Sawdust?
Yeah.
And then he would, that would be filled with ice. Then he would come with his team of horses and pick up the ice from that station and deliver it to the cottage. Nothing was very convenient, I'll tell you, but everybody got along, Dave.
Yeah, well, Major Selby, I had to walk up those steps and carrying that ice. And
not only that, John Vinn, who had met the boats and they had to bring the trunks out here. They brought all their trunks because they stayed all summer. And the men would carry the trunks on their backs and go up those great big tall stairways.
Now, what Vinn was that? Would that be
John? John Vinn.
Would that be Bill Vinn's dad? Bill and Benny Meyer. You know Benny Meyer.
I don't know that, but I. John Vinn. I could think of his family. He was so careful all the time, but he got killed at a railroad crossing in Spring Lake, I believe.
John
M. Vinn, I think it was. But he was everybody's friend. But I don't know just who he's related to.
But he was in the livery business.
Mm-hmm. That was his business.
So, you really wonder how people could make a living in some of the things they did. For example, the celery farmers would have a plot of land no bigger than twice the size of your room and support a whole family with it.
Yeah.
In the livery business, maybe, you know, when the people came here for the summer, he was busy in June and busy in September. What did he do in between?
Well, I know my dad had to make enough in the summer to live on in the winter.
Sure, and, he would.
But prices were different then. You could buy a big ice cream cone for a nickel. How much you pay now. And when Jake and I were first married, you did mention fishing.
Yes.
When we were first married, we lived on $10 a week. That's all that they got from fishing. We could have starved on the fishing business, but he didn't stay with it. After we got married, we were married in November of 1933, and in March of 1934, he got a job, educational advisor in the CCC camps. And
paid for fishing, is that it?
Well, yeah, he went out with his dad.
Oh, okay, yes. Oh, well,
and his brothers.
I knew the faces.
But his dad died before we were married.
Okay. But the faces, what faces would it have been? What was the dad's name?
Peter.
Peter Face, okay. Well, there.
His mother was Dora. And Henry Face was the oldest brother. And Corky,
okay,
the second one.
Okay. Now
Jake was the youngest.
So they were fishermen.
Yeah.
Was Corky a fisherman?
Yeah. They were all in the business.
Yeah, right.
But Jake didn't stay with it long.
He went into education.
Yeah. Well, he, after he went to college, and he never went back to the fishing, but we still like to eat them, but that's...
Yeah. Now, you both then, you were a teacher.
Well, he never was a teacher. He was in phys ed, but he, during the
See, we got married at the tail end of the Depression, and his coach was Jim Crowley at Michigan State.
Sure.
And he, when the fellows graduated, they could have gotten jobs, but Jim Crowley thought they should get more money than what they were offered, so he wouldn't let them take those jobs. Huh. Consequently, Jake never taught phys ed at all.
Didn't he really?
No, he never taught phys ed.
Well, what did he do? Why is that?
Well, he worked at Olber.
Okay.
And but he assisted when Bosworth was here.
Oh,
he
right.
assisted Bosworth
yes.
there in
yeah.
coaching.
And now that was football.
Football.
Because if you say, did he go to Michigan State?
Mm-hmm. He was on the varsity.
He was.
For the,
okay.
for all of his 4 years. He made the freshman team. Well, that's what he went for, because he went for football.
Would it have been, what year, 20?
Well, he graduated in 32. So he went in 29, 30, 31, 32, 29.
They had some good teams here in Grand Haven at that time, too,
oh, yeah.
did they?
Yeah. Well, Jim Crowley, one of the four horsemen.
Exactly.
Was there, and the 1 year Jake played, they called it the Iron Man 11, because they had only two substitutes, I believe. And, but they played Georgetown University and Colgate. You know, they played some. They were not in the Big Ten at that
time. No, no.
That came after Jake died in 49.
Yeah.
He always was wishing that State would become a member of the mm-hmm. Big Ten, but they did after that.
Yeah. Was football his only sport?
No, he played, well, in college it was. Well, he played intramural basketball.
Uh-huh.
He played basketball here. He was captain of the team, I believe, at one time. I remember one very wonderful thing said by one of the fellows who played against him. When I, after Jake died, I was taking courses to finish up my senior year, because I was teaching in Grand Haven and I never had gotten my degree.
Oh.
I had 3 years on campus and I had to go get my degree after Jake died, and I was working on taking courses by extension and correspondence. And 1 year I think the fellow's name was Frank Householder. And he was somebody that Esther Dean Nyland had in her class when she was at Western. And she remembered him. And yet, I think the name of the course was Modern English Usage. When we were having our break one time, he was out in the hallway at the old high school
mm-hmm.
on 7th Street.
On 7th, yeah.
And he said, face, he said, that name rings a bell. He said, was there a Jake face? I said, that was my husband. He said, the cleanest basketball player I ever played against. And I thought, you know, it's
yeah.
something the fellows don't know while they're playing, but
sure.
this fellow remembered that. I felt pretty proud to think nice thing was said about him.
Now, would he have played about the time that Steve Slipper was going to school?
Oh, yeah.
They played together then, did they?
I don't know just how many years.
Those were excellent teams.
Oh, boy. Steve, I can remember going to the games at that time when Steve would make a touchdown at the kickoff. You know, he would receive the ball and pull the entire length of the field.
Yes.
I don't know how many times he did that, but
yes.
it was often.
He was that fast?
Oh, he was fast. He was very fast. Yeah, we used to walk. My sister and I, it was common on Saturdays to walk back and forth three times a day. Three times on a Saturday, we'd go downtown in the morning, and in the afternoon, we'd go way out to Ferry Field to the football
sure.
field. And of course, then there were no bleachers. You stood against a rope
mm-hmm.
and stood the whole afternoon. And then at night, when our parents would go downtown, we'd go down again. So we got plenty of exercise, I'll tell you.
And you walked, even your family, your mom and dad walked.
We walked back and forth. My dad had a horse and buggy, but we didn't always take that. Our feet did most of it.
Yeah. And no car.
We didn't have a car until Ed and I graduated from high school. All those years we walked. Nobody minded it, though.
No.
People didn't. But it was just a common thing. I mean, that was your means of transportation. And
sure.
That's yeah. the way you did it.
Yeah. If it was cold, you just dressed warmer.
Oh, you dressed warmer.
Sure. Yeah.
Long johns in the wintertime and get as far as the cemetery and gate and roll them up above your knees so nobody would know you had them on.
Oh, yeah, I bet. Oh, sure. Because you were wearing skirts.
Oh, yeah.
You have skirts down to here, probably.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, in my day, I was going to say, you could buy many things for a penny. Now, a penny isn't worth anything today.
Sure.
But at the pavilion, I'm rambling, but at the pavilion,
no.
A lot of the candy was penny candy, so children could come and find what they wanted. And as I said, sometimes ice cream cones you could get for a penny. And great big boxes of Cracker Jack for a nickel. Of course, the hamburger was £3 per quarter. Everything was... Well, the dollar was worth a dollar.
Yes, right.
That made all the difference in the world.
Yeah. Might have been worth more than the dollar.
Well, it could have been, too. Yeah.
Well, I heard tales of the kids who would be coming out of town. And they would have to decide whether they wanted to use their nickel, or maybe they have 10 cents to spend. And they could spend a nickel to get out here, and a nickel to get back, or walk out, buy an ice cream cone, and then go back. Spend your 10 cents however you care to.
I remember one 4th of July when it was almost cold enough to snow, and that ice cream didn't sell very good that day. Coffee, I guess, but I don't know how often they served coffee, but that wasn't the usual thing down there.
Yeah.
It was mainly ice cream, sundaes, and sodas.
Boy, those are long hours, though, in your day at
home. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. When Ed and I were in school, when Bill Campbell and his wife ran the ice cream parlor, Ed and I would work... They'd call if they wanted extra help, and we'd go down and wait table on dance nights. And we used to like to do it because we could meet a lot of people that way,
sure.
You know. And they were very nice people to work for. You worked for a certain number of hours, and if you didn't eat a certain amount of stuff while you were there, they made you take it home. So they... And a lot of girls who worked in town at the ice cream places never could have a thing to eat at the places where they worked.
Oh, is that right?
We were fortunate because they were very good to us.
Oh, I see. This is up at the hotel.
No, it was pavilion after my dad sold it. I mean, the Campbells had a cottage in the resort, and they ran the ice cream parlor. Every summer for quite a few years they had. And then, of course, it all changed hands.
Who was it that owned the hotel at the very end?
Mel Wright.
Mel Wright, yeah.
Mel and Ruth Wright. Ruth is still living.
Oh, is she?
Yeah. She's in a nursing home somewhere in Ferrisburg or something.
What were the bands? Were they were big bands.
Yes, but then there was one band right from Grand Haven. I don't know. We used to have bands in Grand Haven, you know, all the time. But it wasn't the Jackie Band. There was one called the Jackie Band.
Yeah.
But no, I just don't know where my dad got them.
But of course, the big band that he was through by the big band era. Big band era was your time, the 20s and the 30s.
Yeah, then we used to go to Fruitport to dances up there. Gillette was in Burn.
Yeah. I talked to Bob Warner. He and Doug Baker sat down like this one time and just chatted. That was fun, hearing their tales about the Fruitport era. But they commented that the bands that came to the, I guess maybe it would have been the roller rink. The big bands came from, was it here?
Well, see, the roller rink was at the, in the basement of the dance pavilion.
Uh-huh.
And well, that was long after my dad died. But they had name bands then, and they had named bands for the dances. But
now there was another roller rink, though.
The barn.
Yes, right.
Oh, the barn. That was a wonderful place to go and dance.
Yeah.
They really had the dance bands.
Yeah. Now that was you were in your 20s or 30s then, weren't you?
Yeah, I was teaching school.
Sure.
In fact, I was invited to dinner with one of my parents of one of my children the night it burned, and I never saw the fire. This woman's husband and children went to watch the fire, and they didn't come. The fire was almost out by the time they came to have dinner with us that night. I know Celia Hands and I were both invited to dinner. I can't remember the name of the people, but
you didn't get to see the fire as a result.
I never got to see the fire. But Jake and I had used to, in our dating years, we spent a lot of nights dancing down at the barn.
Yes.
Lots of fun.
What year did it burn? Would that have been about 60? No, it would have been 52 or 3.
Well, it was after Jake died.
And he died 48?
49.
So, yeah, it would have been just about then, about 52, I think. I got the date, but I'm just trying to reflect it. Yeah, that was a big loss for teenagers. But maybe things were changing by then, too.
Could be.
Yeah.
But, well, actually, when I think of all the things that we did, we never got bored, ever, that I can remember that. We always had so much to do, Dave, that we didn't have a chance to be bored. In the wintertime, we spent our Sundays walking the icebergs from the Monroe Station, I think that's what to the end, to the pier.
Uh-huh.
You know, and sometimes you go in too, you know, you fall through. But there where you went to meet your friends on Sunday afternoon. Then you get back home and you thaw out and make popcorn or make fudge or stuff like that.
Yeah, always something.
Always something to do.
How did your mom wash? Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. In the summertime, out of doors with a great big round tub with a washboard.
She really used the washboard.
Oh, she really used the washboard. And the wash machine that she had a wringer on it. Everything was by hand. Well, I had one too when I was first married, that kind.
And then the washing machine itself that your mom had, was it electric or?
No. When I was little, I can remember came into the house for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And when indoor plumbing came in for the first time.
Yeah.
And that was a house down here on Lake Avenue. But what a thrill. First night when we could turn on a light instead of having a kerosene lamp. But and they were not the lamp. We didn't have lamps like we have today either.
Yeah.
It was just a long cord hanging from the middle of the ceiling with a pull chain on it. But it gave a lot of light at that time.
Yeah.
It was different.
Sure.
But
then you get more sophisticated about it.
Well, and of course, then as the years passed, after my mother died and my father died, my mother made many improvements in the house, you know, as things progressed. Well, the reason we didn't have electricity as early as they did in Grand Haven was because we had to wait until the light poles were brought out this way. As soon as the light poles were brought out, then my dad put the electricity in the house.
Yeah. Now, what year would that have been? Would you have been 10 years old, or?
I don't know if I was 10. Could have been earlier than that.
So it could have been 19. It was after he sold the pavilion.
It could have been in
maybe 1912. I wish I could. I wish there was a date on that house of Eldwire, so that I remember
right.
So I can remember so vividly my dad building that.
Well, if you can remember that vividly, you had to have been over five.
Well, of course, I was about three when I remember the stuff at the resort, because he sold it all when I was 5 years old. So all the things I remember before that.
I can't remember anything 3 years.
Well, that's what people tell me. They said, "How can you remember that?" I don't know, but I said, I would have had no recollection of anything. I couldn't remember that pavilion.
Yeah. Is
that goodness?
You couldn't have been told everything, you know. Oftentimes, either your parents or your parents' friends have told you something, and you know, then it becomes part of the nature.
I can remember too when they close up at night, they'd have their bags of money that they carry along with them, and you'd have to walk from there to the house down here, and they always had to be careful that nobody held them up on the way, you know. It was funny. Well, I don't know if whether you ever were told that when my dad had the pavilion, every summer he put a pier out into the lake. And it was out far enough so that big boats could tie up if they wanted to. And, you know, not just canoes and rowboats.
Right. Uh-huh. It was up quite high.
Larger boats could tie up. I can remember that, because in the fall they take that in so it could be put out the next season again.
Was it on piling? Was the piling driven down into the sand?
Well, evidently that's how they got it.
It looked like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of it. The other thing that I remember seeing pictures of was a slide or a cable, some kind of a run down to the into the water.
I don't know if that was there when we were down there. Could have been later.
It looks like something that you either sat in and zoomed out into the water, or you hung on to it when you got over.
Oh, that was at the state park.
Okay.
The slide was at the state park. That.
Now, you're not thinking of the toboggan or the bobsled run?
No, I went down on that too.
Did you? Yeah. Okay.
Not very often. But that was a lot of fun too.
That was from the top of Five Mile Hill, or close to the top.
Yes.
And you went down to the right-hand road as you're looking down. That's my understanding. What is the one that comes up past the Yonkers?
Emmett. One is Prospect and the other is Emmett.
Emmett.
I think Prospect goes past Yonkers.
Okay.
Emmett is the other one.
Goes the other way.
Yeah.
Okay. Emmett is where the slide went down.
I think so. Our big thing was the sliding down Second Street Hill.
Oh,
the toboggan.
The
toboggan. Oh goodness.
Yeah.
That was so much fun. And we used to go on Lawrence Mulder's toboggan. Bobsled,
yes.
Not toboggan. Uh-huh. Bobsled. And it would seat like 18, 20 people. And in order to ride on it, you had to be sure that you had a hold of the rope bringing it back up the hill. Otherwise, if you weren't able to do that, you couldn't ride. That was a long one. You know, we went all the way down to the train tracks, way down to
Jackson Street. Yes.
Went way down there. And that was a long walk back up the hill, but you had to be sure and grab a hold of that rope or you wouldn't have a ride the next time. But you didn't have many rides a night because it took so long.
Sure.
But oh, what fun.
Yeah.
On real cold days, the kids would get out of school, the boys would get out of school and help ice the hill too.
Uh-huh.
And then it would be
perfect
for.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so much
fun. You would do it at night, mm-hmm. and there were street
lights. Even our parents went with it. My mother and my aunt used to go with us too.
Yeah.
Well, and in order to ride down the hill, but the person, you could hold the legs of the person behind you.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
There were no rest for your feet.
Uh-huh.
But you'd hold the legs, and you wouldn't let go either. It'd be too dangerous.
Sure.
You went so fast.
Uh-huh.
They used to have a watchman, you probably know that, too.
At the,
on Washington Street.
Sure.
So that the interurban wouldn't be coming at it.
Uh-huh. So, and cars were not a problem.
Oh,
so
no.
Much.
No. My early days, cars weren't a problem at all. Uh-huh. Not too many people had them.
Yeah. Now, this would, you were probably 10 years old when you did this toboggan, or bobsledding.
Oh, 12 or 13, probably. Okay. It was in either junior or senior high.
So that would have been 1960.
I graduated in 23.
23, okay. So that would have been right around the wartime.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was.
We have one in the basement of the museum.
I know you have.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now that isn't Mulder's.
I don't know whose it is.
You wouldn't know it.
There was one called the Red Devil. I don't know who that belonged to. But this was a nice sturdy one. Well, they were all sturdy.
We couldn't
go down here. Yeah. I don't know if they all held that many people, but they did hold a lot of people.
Just think of the momentum with that many people aboard. You carry you a long way.
You never went down in a sled unless it was after school. Because once the bobsleds were on the hill, no little...
Yeah.
Little one would be in it. You know, you just couldn't do it.
Take your life in your own hands.
Oh, sure you would.
Yeah. Well, I've seen pictures. Hobie Bell had pictures of the old bobsled. I should think those were more. Was Hobie still living?
I don't know where his wife is. Either. His sister Ellen was a good friend of mine. She played in the bridge club with me. She was my high school senior history teacher.
I'll be there.
And I never dreamed, you know, when I was in high school, I never dreamed that she'd be a close friend of mine. But I know we always called her Miss Bell, and even after she was a close friend, I called her Ellen. My sister used to call her Miss Bell, and she said, "Edna, couldn't you call me Ellen?" And I continued to call her Miss.
Sure. Well, you know, she was probably 24 or 5 years old.
She was right fresh out of college.
Sure.
She came to
right.
teach history here again. I'm sure of that.
But as far as you're concerned, she was an old. She was an adult.
That's right. She was. Sure. Yeah.
I wonder, in your collection, do you have any pictures of the bobsledding or the tobogganing? It was toboggan out on the lakeside, wasn't
toboggan.
It?
Toboggan.
Yeah.
No, I don't have.
Yeah. That'd be interesting. There must be some around.
There must be somebody who has them. I don't know.
Yeah. But then, you know, those.
Well, been talking so much, I just got through writing our history of our church, St. Paul's United Church.
Oh, really?
I guess I'm about the oldest one who remembers
anything
much about it. So
yeah, right.
In fact, I just gave it to the council chairman last night, and I'm getting a copy ready for the Historical Society.
Good.
Because they've been, I understand they have a history of most of the churches. I know a long time ago Dr. Mary asked me whenever were we going to have the history completed. I didn't realize then that I would be the one to finish it.
Yeah.
But see, the background of our church was German. And
this is the St. Paul. It's
United on Griffin Street.
And Griffin, right.
And the background was German, and all of the records of the church were written in German longhand, and people today can't read that. But the Les von Allsburg teaches German in the high school.
Oh, yes.
Now, and he goes to our church, so he was looking at the records one day and going through the one book, he found a letter written by the first minister, Zimmerman, was the first minister of St. Paul's. And that letter he could read, so he translated that and he gave me a copy of it. And so after he gave that to me, I thought, well, I'll give that to the Historical Society, but they were one that brought up to date. So then I had to go back to the records and finish it up.
Cool.
Which I did.
Now, this is the church that's across from the junior high.
Yes.
Yes, that's the one that Larry Dan built.
Mm-hmm.
This one. Larry left and is now.
He left in 1990.
Oh.
And he just returned from his another tour, you know.
Over in.
40 people.
Yeah. He's quite a guy. Former Catholic priest.
Mm-hmm. The minister we have now is brought up Catholic too.
Well, what is the history as far as location is concerned? That is not.
Oh no, where the corner of 7th and Fulton was our.
That's where it was.
And then when we moved, we sold it to Manning Equipment.
Sure.
Yeah. I don't know who owns it now. I know Manning sold it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was the first woman deacon and first woman elder of the church.
Ever?
Yeah.
Isn't
now we have quite a few
women.
Yeah, every time we have an election. But I was elected deacon when women were frowned upon doing any church work like that. But I lived through it. But it was, to me, it's always been an honor to have been the first one.
Yes, well, I don't blame you. And now it would be the historian.
Yeah. Well.
You know, that corner of town was quite a busy corner. You know, there was a drugstore there.
And a saloon.
And the bar was still, that was a saloon.
Saloon, directly
okay.
Across.
Yeah.
Yeah. That always was sort of an eyesore.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't like that.
Uh-huh.
But never bothered us much.
It was not a first-class saloon either. It was.
No, but the drugstore was a good drugstore.
That was.
And
right.
John Voss, you know, his home, the Hoopsters live in now on Harbor.
Oh, yes.
John Voss ran that drugstore for a long time.
Okay.
It was very nice. What did they call it? Square drugstore?
Square
drug. John Walters down in Washington Street.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was a square drugstore.
It might have been a square. It was 15. Oh, you know that Mike Smith, the Coast Guard man, he's the commander of the Coast Guard station. They call it Root Grand Haven. That building next door to the American Legion.
Oh, yeah.
That used to be the Board of Light Power mm-hmm. building. He called me one day and he said, this one was on 7th Street, just the south of the high school, the old high school,
oh.
In that block, and on the same side of the street as high school. He was digging and he found a bottle. Out his back here, and it said Dickinson, and Julia, I think it was, a drugstore brand new. He said, where was that? I said,
yeah, that was before my time.
Yeah, and I, no, we can't find it anywhere. So, we're trying to trace drugstores that probably popped up, but that was a popular drugstore. What was on the other corner where the,
now they have laundromat.
Laundromat, yeah.
I don't remember that was on the other side. I think a home. I think there were, because along the Biles lived along there on that side of the street. Elizabeth Bile. I don't know if you know who she is or not. She's
no.
An old timer.
Yeah. I know Gary Bile.
They're related.
Oh, in Spring Lake, yeah.
Well, Elizabeth Bile and
Aunt Fisher, you know, her husband was in the coal business.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Well, they're sisters.
Okay.
Aunt Fisher and Elizabeth Bynum.
Not Ray, yeah.
No, Ray was the brother of Ray Fisher.
Nelson Fisher.
Nelson.
Yeah,
Nelson.
Right. Right. Okay, sure. Yeah. Sure, Nelson, when you stop and think about it, it's hard to remember what a real junkie that entire waterfront was.
Isn't that beautiful today when you think of what it used to be years ago?
Absolutely.
Of course, at that time, they had all the fish tugs docked there, and they had all of their reels there to put their nets on.
Yeah. On this side of the river, on the Grand Haven side,
yes,
or over
on the Grand Haven side.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, right in that area where Snug Harbor.
Yes.
In that, just at the foot of Howard Street Hill.
Where Minnow Morris had her place.
Yeah, that's the, right. Yes.
You remember Minnow? Minnow Water.
Yes.
That pretty well described her business,
that's
too.
That's right.
But the other side of the river, of course, there were lots of fish shanties over there, too. And where did...
Faces was on this side, I believe.
That was when all of that came to an end. There was all of that litter, in effect, along there.
Right.
And when the carp ferries left, and when the excursion lines left, or the...
That was a big loss to me. I gave them when the carp ferries left. Somebody just took that trip across from Ludington across the lake, and they said, it's wonderful to be able to do that again. You know, and what's the name of that new boat?
The, I think, was that the Spartan or the Deep?
I know they went from Ludington.
Yeah, what is the name of that? I think they put Conrad at the Apollo.
Yeah, that's the line. It's an old line, too, isn't it?
Badger, the Badger.
Badger, that's right.
There's the Spartan, the Badger. He bought them all. And I think there were two or three, but he's only been one in service. And did pretty well, I understand.
It used to be fun to take a trip in the summertime from Grand Haven to Muskegon on the boat. Walk around Muskegon, and then at a certain time, the boat would return to Grand Haven. Like a little excursion.
Sure.
I used to do that quite often.
Now, what boat was that?
Well, it could be the Alabama. I forget just which one. Or the Milwaukee Carpenter. There was one to make the winter. I was in college the year that we had that terrible storm when the Andaste went down.
Oh, yes.
And the other character is?
Yeah, right. 1929.
Mm-hmm.
So that registers in your memory.
My goodness.
What a tragedy it was. Where were you going to school?
Western.
Uh-huh.
Kalamazoo.
So you didn't, you weren't here for the funerals?
No, but I remember going into the beauty shop on Saturday when I saw the headlines on the paper. Oh my goodness, that's home, you know.
Sure.
I didn't realize that the storm was that bad, but it was a bad winter.
It sure was.
The father of one of the boys that graduated from high school with me went down in one of the ships, Baxter.
Oh yes, sure. He was on the Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was the purser or the...
Yeah,
exactly what the title was. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I think when was it that he had left the lakes and had gone to work on the barges, the gravel barges, that would have been Tom Johnson, which would be, Johnson or construction aggregates. And of course, Johnson was related to Hazel Schultz somehow, you know, who Hawk Schultz. Somehow,
Grace was
Grace's father was Tom
Grace,
Johnson.
Yes, I'm thinking of Grace.
Grace.
Yeah.
Her father was Tom Johnson.
But one of those men, it might have been Baxter, went to work on that for 2 pounds. He had to get back out on the lakes.
It's tragic.
Yeah. The fishermen, of course, had to have taken their life in their hands on many occasions to go out in storms.
Well, Jake used to tell of the tugs getting caught, and of course, that I remember seeing pictures of the tugs being in the Parkery caught in the harbor, you know,
yeah.
The snow was, the ice was so thick, and they had to, you could walk across the ice to get on the pier.
Sure.
And that's how they took food out to them. They had to have food carried out until enough of it melted so they could get back out, until a pathway was made for them. So they went out in pretty rough weather too, so you're right, they did take their life in their hands.
Yeah. Because those boats of theirs were they 50 feet? Or?
They were quite long. I never rode on. I was just telling the part of the face relations that I never had a ride on the Dornbos. That was the big tug they had. And the girl said, "You didn't? Well, we used to ride it all the time." Of course, after Jake and I married, then he wasn't on the tug, but he never invited me to go on it anyway.
He worked aboard the Dornbos.
Yeah.
That would have been for the Dornbos fisheries.
Yeah, well, all the fish they got, they sold to Dornbos.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I understand that the Dornbosses were not the big fishermen, but they were the big fish processors.
Mm-hmm. All the smoked fish that they put out were excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Finally, it was the demise of the business.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah, yeah, sure it is. Well, you better get to what you're doing tonight.
At a church meeting.
Oh, do you really? You never quit, I'll tell you.
Well,
it's been fun.
That's the one thing, yeah. I don't know if this is any help to you.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'm trying to do the history of Grand Haven, and I'm going to pick it up from 1890 up to the present time. And
if I think of anything, I didn't tell you. I'll call you sometime.
Okay. You know, these pictures are just great. What I would like to do sometime, I'll remember them. I don't want to take them now.
Oh, wait, I have another copy of this.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
For the museum. I'd like to make sure the museum has it. It's hard to think that this used to be the bathhouse. Oh, yeah, I can see you have. Slabs of marble out there to.
Well, I don't know. These pictures are so little. I don't know if you can.
Oh well, out. You know, there's enough detail. Maybe not that one so much, but certainly this one.
The one that has August.
Yeah, that's where's August.
This one. Right here.
There it is. Okay.
That shows. Well, you might as well take these if you want them.
Okay. They're no one that you know.
No, I don't believe so. I'm trying to see. So there's the lock that went
to the dance pavilion.
Okay.
Right there.
All right. Now, there's the Highland Park Hotel up there?
Yes. That's
okay.
The hotel. So that was already there to see.
Well, that was built about 1890-something, 6 or 7, somewhere
in
there.
My dad came over when he was 16. He was born in 1877. I was 2 years old, 79, and he died in 1919. Well, I figured out that
in 1875
when he came over.
It was just about that time that the maybe 2 years after that that it began to get active down there.
Now the business about Captain Walker, I know they called the fellow Captain, I guess.
Yeah, okay.
But whether he was the same captain that was at the Gooseherd,
yeah,
that I don't know.
Yeah, I think Matt Walker would have been a little bit later.
Would you like that one?
Sure, you bet.
It was the old lookout.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, very good.
Well,
it would be awfully nice.
August Bosford.
Okay.
B-O-S-E-K-E-R.
Now, what if one of those is him? It isn't, is it? He's not in that picture.
Oh, but this, I don't know. No.
Look at the cigarette.
Now, he could have been. You see the fellow standing there?
Let's see.
That could be him.
Let's see, there are a couple of girls back there.
Right here. Is that a girl?
That is a woman.
Oh,
there's a fellow bending over up there. Right here. Mm-hmm. That's the one that you see. Mm-hmm. That could be him. Sure. Oh my gosh, look at the cigarettes. Cigarettes hanging out of their mouths here.
Really? Now I can't see that.
Sure. Yeah, cigarettes.
Yeah, something.
And what an outfit she's got on.
Oh, goodness. Well, one thing I have to tell you is each year bathing suit companies would come and show their suits, you know, and my dad would buy new suits, and my sister and I used to get
the samples?
Sample suits. Oh,
sure.
Goodness, what beautiful suits we got.
Oh, yeah.
We got wool suits with white silk trimming and all pearl buttons down the front. I still can remember what they looked like. I wish I had a picture of them. We got nice things. Well, I have to tell you, too, I remember from childhood that so many of the resorters would come back the next season, and they'd have presents for Edna and I.
Oh.
But I got so, the one man brought us new parasols every year, and I got so I could hardly stand to look at them. I don't want a parasol anymore, you know. Yes.
They were probably nothing you'd carry.
Oh, yes, they were.
Oh, yes,
because you wouldn't be caught dead not covering your head up in the sun, you know. You walked with a parasol.
Huh.
You wouldn't have brown skin like people have today.
What about women out bathing?
They even wore stockings.
Oh, yeah. Right, well, I knew that they did, but their head was open then. But probably not for long.
Well, the head would have those...
Here.
Those
caps
on.
Sure.
Caps.
That's right, they did. That's right.
I can remember walking from the house down there, and I wore stockings, too. Bright red to match the trimming on one suit, I know.
Oh, boy. Sure. You know, that's probably so. There was no sunbathing, was there?
Oh, no. And no sweat, not hardly anything. You couldn't swim in those suits.
Yeah.
Too heavy with the water.
Yeah,
so
right.
You got into the water.
You got wet into it. Just kind of played around, but
right.
That was about it. Well, let me see how I turn this off. After the tape was turned off, Bertha began to talk about
the gypsies that used to come out into the area. And she said they were annual visitors, and they would come in large wagons, like a hay wagon, something similar to that, that we used to have for hay rides, and that the people would arrive, usually a driver or two up front, with all of the rest of the family riding behind, and they couldn't be trusted. And so usually what happened was the police force just escorted them out of town and got them out past the city limits and kept them moving. But they were colorful, she said, and it was entertaining to the kids, but it was always a bit of consternation for the adults to wonder, well, were they going to lose this year?